Welcome to PSIX. We're going to finish up, briefly, our discussion of the free will defense and Elvin Plantinga's famous presentation of that defense. Then we'll be treating Augustine and Leibniz on the problem of evil and their responses to it. Now, at the end of last lecture, the way he described section 10, the last section of Plantinga's article, is to say that Plantinga has, in effect, taken the original distinction between natural evils and moral evils, and has, in effect, conflated that distinction, because he attributes the bringing about of natural evil to the misuse of freedom, namely the freedom of Satan, or the freedom of Satan and his cohorts. So he groups all evils under the banner of moral evil. If that's the case, then the free will defense is triumphant, because then he's shown that it's at least possible that there could be as much evil in the world, the amount of evil in the world that we see at present, and that God could exist in this world, because the evil that is brought about by the agency, the misuse of freedom in human moral evil, that comes about by the misuse of human moral freedom, and natural evil, on the other hand, are really moral evils in the broader sense, because these are attributed to Satan and the misuse of that evil, of that freedom. Now, it's important to keep in mind that all Plantinga needs as the free will defender is the possibility that his story is true, the possibility that God exists and evil exists, and the reason why it does is because humans and Satan, or Satan and his cohorts, have misused their freedom in the world. Plantinga is not arguing that the story he has told is believable, or that it's most highly likely to be true, or highly likely true, but he's merely submitting to us that it is possible. Maybe he believes that evil should be attributed to Satan, natural evil should be attributed to Satan, maybe not. We do know, for example, when Jesus was among us and teaching some 2,000 years ago for his 30 or so years, he did confront the activity of Satan in many different ways, casted out demons from those who were ill, caused the demons to rush into the pigs that went down and drowned themselves in the lake, and so forth. There was much demonic activity, some attributing their activity to natural evils at that time in his ministry, that he saw in his ministry, and so forth. However, Scripture also seems to point that it's at least possible that natural evils come about by the permissive will of God, sometimes perhaps even by the direct hand of God himself. This is, of course, more of a contentious issue, but it seems at least plausible that some verses do attribute the natural evils, some of them, to the direct hand and work of God himself. And so it's not clear from his article whether or not Plantinga believes, for example, that all natural evils brought about by Satan or Satan and his cohorts. But all and for sure what we can say is that Plantinga is successful. He has attributed all evils to the misuse of freedom. And therefore, it's at least possible that God and evil could exist in a possible world. The free will defense is triumphant in Plantinga's presentation of it. The question that is presented at this point, though, is, so what? That is, how important is Plantinga's work here? It is important, I think, to cast aside the logical problem of evil. It is important to have a very solid answer to show that it's logically consistent that God exists and evil exists in a possible world, that there are possible worlds in which God exists and evil exists. That's very important. However, we'd like to know whether or not one of those possible worlds in which God exists and evil exists is in fact the actual world, wouldn't we? That takes us to the issue of theodicy and the issue that moves beyond the logical problem of evil to the issue of the evidential problem of evil. Is evil evidence against God's existence? And if so, how much? And if so, what is the best response or a good, acceptable response that the theist can make to the existence of evil? And so I conclude that Alvin Plantinga's work, when responding to Mackie and others on the logical problem of evil, Plantinga's free will defense is triumphant. It shows that the logical problem of evil is not a problem, but it does pretty much nothing to rebut, to answer the evidential argument from evil, the different arguments from evil on an evidential level. And so we will turn later in our course to dealing with the evidential problem of evil. We'll discuss more then what it is in more depth, what it is and how the Christian is best to respond to these types of evil, these types of arguments from evil. But on the rest of this tape, what I'd like to do is pause, as it were, for the moment, and talk about the history of Christian theology for just a moment, especially looking at two figures who have tried to offer lengthy answers to the problem of evil. One is St. Augustine in the 4th and 5th century, whose dates are 354 to 430 AD, and Leibniz, whose dates are 1646 to 1716. Now, according to John Hick, this is a thesis that he presented in his famous work, and a work which is important to the problem of evil, Evil and the God of Love. His thesis is that there's been two main schools of theodicy in the history of the church. One is what he calls the Augustinian school, and the second is the Irenaean school of responses to the problem of evil. The Augustinian and the Irenaean. Let me spell Irenaean for you. It's Irenaean, named after Irenaeus, a 2nd century Christian theologian and apologist. Both Augustine and Leibniz have given famous responses to the problem of evil. And we turn then to Augustine to understand and appreciate and then respond and criticize his views on evil. Now, according to John Hick, there are sort of three emphases in Augustine, and we can frame them in three different questions, and the emphases go in this order, okay, in this, as it were, lexicographical order. In other words, you have to deal with each of these questions in turn, starting with the first verse and moving on, setting a framework for these later questions. Here's the three questions that Augustine tries to answer. One, what is evil? What does it consist of? What is evil in the very nature of the case? Two, what is the origin of evil? Where does evil come from? What's the source or origin, the fount of evil? And three, why did God create many different forms of life and not just the highest angelic form? So we have these three questions. What is evil? What is the origin of evil? And why didn't God just create, in effect, he's asking, why did God create the whole scale of being, so many distinct forms, species of different animals, plants, minerals, angels, humans, and so forth? Why didn't God just settle with the highest form of imperfect and finite beings, but of higher form, the highest forms, namely the angels. Why did God create squirrels and snails and puppy dogs, tails and humans and everything in between, from sand and air all the way up to the highest created being, which are the angels? And of course, when I say angels or the angels, I'm not referring to the California Angels, even though you may love baseball and have quite a stake in the Angels or some other team, but I'm talking about the angelic host, the angelic beings who serve God very close to God in heaven, but are in fact finite and created, dependent upon God from moment to moment. Though we may not necessarily have Augustine's famous autobiography, the way he came to faith, called The Confessions, though that may not be one of our textbooks, you might want to look in a local library or through inner office or inner library loan, look up Augustine's Confessions and read Book 7. It's probably the best discussion of Augustine on evil that's available. However, for the time being, we'll try to answer these three questions according to Augustine and his philosophy on evil. So we turn to the first question. What is evil? We ourselves have tried to pause and ponder a bit about what evil is on an earlier lecture. Augustine, after he thought for years and years during his time teaching rhetoric in Milan and various other places in North Africa and in Italy, and during his early days, of course, he was not a Christian until around age 30. He sort of took on various views through his academic and younger years, his years of development, his teens and 20s and so forth. He was, for a while, a Manichaean. The Manichaeans believed that there was, in effect, two realms of evil. There was a realm, or two realms of good and evil. There was, in fact, one realm of evil, one realm of good. There were eternal realms, and they warred against each other. And that explained, the Manichaeans thought, the mixture of good and evil in the world, and why good and evil will always be battling against one another. Well, I suppose that's one way to capitulate about a divine being, simply to say that good and evil have always been around and that they'll always continue to be around. But in his 20s, Augustine ceased being a Manichae and he became a Neoplatonist. That is, he became a Neoplatonist. There was a movement following a number of people in the 2nd and 3rd century and 4th century AD, one particular individual by the name of Plotinus, who resurrected and reincorporated and really thought deeply on philosophy and life and God and so forth, using the categories of Plato. And so their school was called the Neoplatonists, the New Platonists. Augustine was very influenced by this camp in his 20s. And then finally, around age 30, I believe it was age 32, he was finally baptized. He wrote his confessions and became a Christian and at last discovered the Christian faith. But what is evil? According to Augustine, after he became a Christian, he solidified what he thought it was. Well, he said that it was a privatio boni, a privation of good. Evil is the privation of good. Privatio boni is a Latin phrase which means the privation of good. It's spelled privatio boni, the privation of good. The point here is that evil, in Augustine's sense, evil does not exist on its own. Okay? Rather, it needs a host. in which to dwell. Okay? In other words, evil is parasitic in nature. It needs a host in which to dwell. It can't, as one of my professors at Purdue University said, evil can't just run around on its own two legs. It always occurs in something. It's the privation of good. And so it goes something like this. God creates something, say a good tree, but then something within the tree goes well. One of its systems that has to function properly in order to, say, transfer nutrition up the trunk of the tree and into the branches and leaves. Let's say that stops functioning properly. It ceases to function according to the way God designed that tree to work. Well, that would be a privation of good, because it's good for the tree to nourish itself from the ground. When that system, the system of nourishment, fails, then that good fails. And we say that the tree has taken on evil. There's now something evil within the tree, because something that was good is now taken away from the tree. Okay, so evil is parasitic. It needs a host in which to dwell. It does not exist on its own. There's a postulate which is akin to the idea that evil is a privation of good. And it goes something like this. Augustine thought that good, or goodness, is convertible with being. Okay? Goodness, or good, is convertible with being. This is probably a carryover from his Neoplatonic teachings and understandings, because Plato thought the same thing way back in the 4th century and 3rd century BC. What does it mean to say that good is convertible with being? Well, it's the same thing as to say this. Insofar as a thing is, it is good. Okay, it's basically to ascribe goodness to being. And of course, ultimately, insofar as God exists, God is good. And since God has infinite existence, infinite being, he is therefore infinitely or all good. What's interesting with this is that Satan too is good, isn't he? Insofar as he exists. Okay, insofar as Satan exists and he has being, he is good. But with respect to his will, he is evil. Okay, so in his work Enchiridion, which is the Greek word for the textbook or the handbook, Augustine says of a fallen man, he says, quote, a fallen man, quote, is a good because he is a man. But he is evil because he is wicked. Okay, so a thing can be both good and evil at the same time and in the same way? No, not in the same way, but rather with respect to different parts of the person. A man, insofar as he is a man, is good. But a man, insofar as his will is wicked, is bad, because the will is wicked. It is turned away from functioning the way God designed it to function. So, there's no such thing as positive evils in Augustine's view. Interesting. Rather, evils are goods gone bad, as it were. Goods not functioning properly, or as they should in relation to God. Let's turn now to the second question and see how Augustine answers that question. Augustine's second question is this. What is the origin of evil? Augustine gives and ascribes himself to, in his theology, in his confessions, and so forth, to the traditional view of the fall of man. Okay? What is the origin of evil? It's going to go back to the fall. We have to, though, look at the story that he tells us. Here's the story as he puts it together. God, the Bible tells us, created everything in its place. Everything in its place. The Bible tells us that man was created a little lower than the angels. Okay? Now, evil takes place when a created being loses its original view or slantedness. Okay? When God creates us, when God creates the whole world, everything is subservient to God. Everything is honoring to God as the Lord of creation. When he creates humankind, they are not focused on themselves, but focused on God. They are, in a metaphorical sense, looking upward. God is at the top of the chain of being. Then there's angels, and then humankind. And when the humans are created, they're looking up to God in reverence, awe, service, and attraction. They're attracted to God, and they just feel that they must serve God. Created a little lower than the angels. But evil takes place when the created being loses that attractiveness to God, loses that original vision of God. Okay? We're created with our vision focused upon God, and when we fell, we began to focus upon something else. Okay? And the fall, how did the fall take place? This is another question that we have to ask Augustine. The way in which sin entered the world, Augustine thought, was through pride. It was through pride that man and the devil began to focus on themselves, thinking, if you consult, for example, Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, the devil wanted to be like God. The devil said that he would ascend to the Almighty, and in fact above the Almighty, and would become like God. This is the ultimate sin of pride. As a dependent being, we have to remain dependent. We can't pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. We are dependent. But to think of ourselves as independent of God, this is the ultimate sin, the sin of pride. Augustine thought that sin entered the world through that, through the vanity of pride. Think, for example, in this context of Proverbs 16:18, which reads, "Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall." Perhaps quite literally, Augustine took that verse to mean that pride went before the fall of Adam, by which sin entered into the world and the human race. There's still the further question, of course. If God is perfect and he created the world, created man finite though perfect, how could any evil tendency, for example, like pride, how could that evil tendency ever affect Satan and then in turn humankind? How could that evil tendency ever arise? From where did it arise? And so we return again to the origin of evil. What is the origin of this evil tendency called, which Augustine called pride? And he does hint at an answer, a proposed answer to this. And I give it to you for your consideration. Kind of a bizarre idea, but maybe there's something to it after all. Created beings are able to sin, right? Posse peccari, as it were. Created beings are able to sin because they are created from nothing. Okay, now there's all these connections here. What is the origin of evil? Evil is a privation of good. But good, remember, is convertible with being. And the idea is that human beings and other natural things that are made by God are called forth, created out of nothing. Nothing is a lack of being, and so is evil. Well, it's a privation of good, but good is convertible with being. And so we're able to sin because we're created from nothing. Augustine thought that there was a sort of tendency for things created from nothing to return to nothing. And so man is created perfect but corruptible. able to be corrupted. Okay, interesting. So Augustine thought that man was created perfect, but able to be corrupted. And the ability to be corrupted comes from the fact that his very material was created out of nothing, created from nothing, created a nihilo, as traditionally theologians have said about creation, created a nihilo, out of nothing. As I said earlier, there, according to Hick, there are two major strands, two major schools of theodicy in the history of the church. The Augustinian theodicy, based squarely on the fall of man and so forth, as we'll develop more here, and the Irenaean theodicy, based on some of the theology of Irenaeus given in the 2nd and into the 3rd century AD. So ultimately, the answer we get to the question, what is the origin of evil, according to Augustine, is that evil is, or comes about, evil comes about by or through pride. Satan and Adam exhibited pride. They wanted to be like God, and in fact, above God. But by nature, they are not, they were not, and are not, and will never be like God or be God. They are dependent beings, every moment dependent upon the power and sustenance of God.